You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 411 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And you've been watching the Seattle Mariners. And we are coming to you from different locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the somehow bright spot Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, no.
The NFL draft, most exciting part of the month of April? It was, anyway.
You know, there was day when I thought the Seattle swoon was over because of the Seahawks' results and the Mariners actually won again. And then then time continued and it became clear that Seattle still swooning.
We'll always have day.
And what they're not swooning for is the Seattle Mariners, that's for sure.
It's episode 411, though. What's the 411? It's right here on the Pelton Cast.
I didn't think of that one. I thought we were going the Edgar Martinez direction. Or
absolutely not.
A part of this year's team.
Fine. Delev Shrimp, I'll accept. No need to call 411. You've got the machine right here.
Oh, boy. Well, should we get into our toast? Because we start close to home for you. With a congrats to Baby Fantasy Genius on hitting his first career home run.
Out of the park home run. Yeah. It's important to acknowledge because there is no greater feeling to me, basically in the entire world, than hitting an out of the park home run. Being able to trot around the bases, it is an incredible experience. There was one time you and I playing at the Summer Classic in North Seattle, right?
Did you say North Seattle?
It was in Queen Anne. That's North Seattle.
I mean, I'm aware. That is some hashtag fun gas geography if ever I've heard
it. If you get north of the Space Needle, it is North Seattle to us. Anyway, at the Summer Classic in Queen Anne with friends of mine from, I'm not going to say childhood, from youth and young manhood. And you and I were playing in the Summer Classic. We both hit, what are I think it's called Queen Anne Playfields, something like that.
Sounds right.
We both hit out of the park home runs. And just, I don't even give a shit who else was there. It doesn't matter the level of competition. Being able to trot around those bases after hitting a home run is the best feeling in the world. So Luka doing that at age 11, hitting an out of the park home run. He was the first player on his team all year to hit a home run. It was pretty incredible. And he'd actually been hitting kind of badly before then. So I wasn't at the game because I had to take Marco to a baseball game. And I like watching on the freaking Game Changer, just like watching the app. And I go into the shower and I'm like, because I need timing stuff. And then I come back out and I see a message from Ben Rodriguez, the famous Cousin Katie's husband, who was at the game in Everett, being like, Luka cranked a dinger over the fence. And I'm just like, what? It was like a positive version of the community meme where I come back and everything's on fire. And I'm like, what happened? All of a sudden he's hitting homers, and Ben was like, he does this all the time, right? And we're like, no, that is the first one ever.
I mean, it's pretty rare, I feel like, at that age, as you're saying, first one for his team all season. You noted the level of competition.
There was another homer in the next game for his team. So the Phil Johnson play fields in Everett, they have kind of shorter fences. So
it's like
it's 200.
The left field, it's like the Green Monster.
They were also, there's two different types of bats that you could use.
Doubles off the Green Monster.
You can use, they were able to use, like, they call these bats U-Trip, the USSA bats or whatever, which are a little bit more juiced for this tournament. So, ball went a little bit further.
Okay, so it was basically like playing at the Kingdom in the 90s, of what you're talking about.
Yes.
No marine layer to be found.
Except the marine layer is to be found everywhere the Mariners are.
It's like a cloud following them around all the time, but
not Canzone as much anymore. All of a sudden, Canzone, we're waving our little Italian flag there. We've got one player.
It is true. You noted the level of competition at the Summer Classic. I feel like that's less of a factor than the size of the field. It's not like you were like some amazing baseball player who was going and beating up on children or something. Like, I think you were as accomplished a baseball player as anyone there, or like
I think
less
that is
accomplished.
true.
Yeah.
A less accomplished baseball player than everyone there. No, I don't think that's
I
true.
mean, you never played organized baseball, though.
I was like a pretty solid backyard baseball player, though.
My
Would you agree with
1 year of organized baseball may have put me ahead of the curve.
I feel like I was better than you growing up, though, for the most part.
Oh,
You don't agree with this?
no,
Is
I
this
feel like I
revisionist
did way
history?
better in the home run derbies that we did.
Yellow squishy ball in the backyard.
I mean, Michael Bernazzani crushed us because he had that short porch
As
as a
a lefty,
lefty.
yeah, that just
Yeah,
wasn't
it's a
fair.
huge advantage the way that our backyard was oriented.
You know, that's the fun thing about baseball, though, is you have to adjust to the different parks.
That's true. We had the orange monster and left, that being our house.
Also, the gutter going straight up the house,
Is
the
the foul
entire
pole?
house as
Yeah.
the foul pole. Beautiful. Perfect way to grow up in Boulevard Park, Washington. But it's spring break this week for the children. And Marco, like in the middle of the day, was like, they're just, of course, bored all the time because they need to be entertained by adults constantly. And Marco was like,
I
what
think
would you
that's what
be
the
doing?
screens were for.
I don't know. We have every console, but Luke has been playing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, which means that I'm playing GTA. Anyway, he was like, what would you be doing on spring break if you were a kid? And I'm like, playing baseball in the backyard constantly is what I'd be doing. Exactly what his brothers are doing and he's not. I was like, get the fuck out there and go play baseball in the backyard.
Oh, it was a nice day for it.
Until the Mariners game started.
Where would Luka rank on the Mariners in home runs currently?
Oh, it's coming up in the hot takes. No,
Okay.
I think he would be fourth on the team in home runs.
Only three different Mariners have hit home runs thus far? That seems plausible, but
He would be
so
tied
sad.
for fourth. Canzone has three, Haniger has two, JP has two, and then a handful of players have one. So he would be tied for fourth on the team with his
I mean,
one home run.
that's not actually how ties work. He would be tied for eighth on the team. Oh, wait, sorry,
No.
what you're saying. He has one. Yes,
What are you
so yes, he would
talking
be
about?
tied for fourth. I'm sorry, I was
Every week I have to correct
doing
you on something
zero.
now.
I don't know. You're right. I've really fallen off in my
Yeah.
old age.
Hashtag washed.
And I haven't even reached the old age yet.
Yeah, not till midnight.
Yeah. Maybe, hopefully this pod will be long done by then.
No, we, I don't know. Look, the Seahawks signed an Italian guy, so
Oh, I didn't
you don't have
realize
the
this.
notes. I don't know if he's actually gonna make the roster, but
I
Falcon
didn't know that he was
Award.
Italian.
All right.
Well, yeah, you'll have to fill me in when we get to the Seahawks section. All right, congrats
That's it.
to
That's the extent of the filling
what's his name? Which of the guy? I know they've signed multiple guys. Is it the
It's a
offensive
guard.
lineman?
Yeah.
Congrats to Raul Ruiz Diaz, who was named the MLS Player of the Match Day after scoring twice in the Sounders' first win of the season on Saturday. Congrats to Seattle native and Garfield High School product Jalen Stewart on winning a national title with UConn. Do you know how old we are?
This is Roderick or Lodrick's child.
Lodrick's son, yes.
I do not accept this information.
I think that's the appropriate reaction.
How old is Lodrick Stewart?
So his first year of college was what,
Oh,
2002, I want to
he's the
say.
exact same age as me. He was born 25 days before me.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. I mean, honestly, like his kid's not that much older than mine.
I mean, 8 years, 7 years, I guess, is still pretty considerable. But yeah, now two in the family because Roderick won one with Kansas. Hakeem
No,
Stewart did not
I'm
win any national
happy for Jalen
championships.
Stewart. Happy for Jalen Stewart.
You'll recall I boldly predicted back late, low back December that he was going to transfer to UW at the end of the season. It seems unlikely at this point after you've been part of the national championship. Well, he didn't play a lot. I was correct about that part of it, I suppose.
That a bold prediction that you made?
It was.
We'll see. I think it'd be great. I would take it.
Yeah, without question.
There probably are other people who want to go play for the national champions.
I'm sure that there
Just
are,
gonna
yes.
throw that out there. So I feel like maybe if he's looking for more playing time, right here, Sprinkles gotcha.
Sprinkles gotcha. All right, speaking of the NCAA tournament, congrats to our tournament pool winners on the men's side. It's two-time winner Nate Taggart.
I swear to God, Nate is way too good at everything that we have. I feel like he's won all of these. Everything that the Pelton cast has done, he's won.
Is he won fantasy baseball? I don't feel like Nate's doing fantasy baseball. But this raises the question, should there be like a Pelton cast grand slam?
Of other things to win?
If you win like the bracket pool, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, fantasy basketball, fantasy WNBA. I think you have to win all of them.
Not enough people play those. A lot more people play football than play any of the other ones. I think Luka's won his fantasy baseball game this week. He informed me.
Yeah, but the same percentage of people win. It's not like it's easier to win, therefore. It's not like we have 1/36 team league in football.
Fair enough.
Think how low you would finish in that one. Nate was one.
I have no retort. I'm just upset.
Nate was one of five people who had UConn over Purdue in the final. On the women's side, congrats to Aaron Robertson, who was one of three people who had South Carolina over Iowa in the final. I was this close. They hadn't called that moving screen, and UConn had beaten Iowa. I in South Carolina had gone on to still win the championship. I would have won the women's pool. But I got to admit, in my heart, I was still hoping for Iowa to win because I wanted to see Caitlin Clark one more time. You have no reaction to this?
If Iowa would have lost in the previous round, you would have won?
If UConn had beaten Iowa in that game, it came down to the final seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't sad to watch Caitlin Clark one more time, but like, I only watched the first half, but it seems like it was a little bit of an ignominious finish.
I mean, ignominious is too strong, but there was an element of like, well, if you advance far enough, eventually your limitations are going to be exposed. And that did finally happen to Iowa in the final.
I feel like both of the NCAA championships were like one truly great player and just some guys going against a very... clearly the best team. Watching those in back-to-back days and seeing how both of them started as well. I was watching the very beginning of Purdue UConn because I was watching the Seattle Mariners.
Whose choice was that? Yes, you borrowed that thought, by the way, from Mike Bate, who posted it in the Pelton cast Discord, which has been popping. It's been popping.
It was pretty obvious. It felt to me early on in the UConn Purdue game where it was like they were teetering for a moment, and UConn just, in the same way that South Carolina was, they just poured on. They're just relentless. When you see those teams that are relentless like that, and you're just like, there's nothing we could do here. Literally, there was nothing that Purdue could have done.
It's kind of weird because I saw UConn play in person in Seattle when they beat Gonzaga. And like they were impressive. I knew they were very good. Obviously, was a big fan of my guy, Donovan Klingon, who potentially by the time you're listening to this, my draft projections will be out on ESPN.com. And of course, Kling Kong will be number one in those projections.
Really? Oh, yeah. Where is he at?
Just ahead of Edie. Well, he's number three in Jonathan Givony, the ESPN top 100.
Can he shoot?
No.
But so how valuable is a like a traditional big man in the modern NBA?
I mean, I think if you're like being really optimistic about him.
I learned who this person was yesterday, by the way, just throwing that out there. I mean, they got a tall guy too.
I'm sure you knew about him last year when he was number one in the stats only projections.
I watched no NCAA tournament last year. I think I watched basically none because I was at South by Southwest, and then I just for some reason didn't care. And I do feel like kind of the NCAA tournament had a little bit of a renaissance this year.
Oh, without question.
I don't really know why, because I only basically knew Edie as far as like any of the players across the country. But seeing that when I saw that UConn also had a big man, I was just like, literally, Purdue can't do, they have nothing. Like, if you also have a proper 7-footer and you have the rest of UConn's roster, the fuck is Purdue supposed to do about that?
I mean,
right?
That's why they ended up taking 5 3-pointers in the game. It was pretty wild.
But no, it's the exact opposite of how the game should have been played. Like, if they have a big man and you can't just go and feed Edie the entire game.
But they were feeding Edie the entire game. He was scoring. I mean, he scored 37 points, but
he was UConn not scoring as easily as he scores in other situations.
Sure, yeah.
And so if he's not scoring at as high of a percentage or as high of the clip, you're getting two and they're just getting them so much faster. And especially as the game teetered away, it was like, y'all are going to do this. You're going to make up 13 points, 15 points, two at a time. It's not going to happen.
I mean, what else were they going to do? Like,
shoot threes. It was one of those situations.
But they were
where,
guarded.
Like,
it's not like they were like refusing to shoot threes.
Keep getting blocked. That, I'm telling you, that UConn team was fucking relentless. Like,
they had the greatest point differential for a champion ever.
Everywhere. They were everywhere.
But that's what I'm telling you is I saw them in December against Gonzaga.
There
is no
situation where an NBA team cannot get threes off, though. It just does not exist.
I agree with that. An NBA team also has much better athletes than Purdue has starting in the backcourt.
I mean, it's obviously like it's a Purdue issue that they're basically. I mean, is this wrong? Are they not Zach Edey and some guys?
It's not a Purdue issue. It's a like most teams aren't good enough to win the national championship issue. Like, yeah. UW would still love to have a lot of those other Purdue players. UW still would love to have Kate Martin on the women's basketball team.
We're not comparing this to UW.
Well,
that's
I'm just saying, like, the rest of the world is out there. This is what I'm saying about, like, the expectations change just because you go far.
Yeah.
So anyways, I saw them play Gonzaga, and I'm like, this is obviously a very good team, but did I imagine that they were going to surpass last year's dominant NCAA tournament win and going back-to-back? I definitely did not think that. And then Klingon got hurt like 2 games later and they started playing small without him and making a bunch of threes. And then they plugged him back in and were able to do that. It was pretty impressive.
He's kind of a beast. I liked him a lot. But coming back to the question, what is a traditional big man, if you're saying that's what Klingon is, if he doesn't shoot threes and he's like a primarily like defense finishing style big man, right? How valuable is that in the modern NBA? Is he playable in a playoff series?
I think so, because he's not immobile. And he's certainly much more mobile than Zach Edey. We've seen him defend out on the perimeter.
Seeing Edey run down the court, I was just like, this man is not going to make it in the NBA.
I mean, I don't know what that means, he's not going to make it. Like,
It's very unlikely
to me he wouldn't play at least 8 years in the NBA.
Okay. He's like a role player. He's a role player in the NBA.
Exactly. He's also number four in my projections.
Is he really?
Yeah, I mean,
your projections wildly overvalue big men.
They are adjusted for position, but yet, I mean, just basically, like, Edey was so dominant, even relative to the rest of college basketball's big men, that it doesn't matter. But, like, I don't think I would not take him fourth in the draft. I don't think he's going to be that good defensively. Klingon, I think, is more legit.
Second round pick right now?
No. I mean, he's 13th in the top 100.
Zach Edey is? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
He may go a little. I wouldn't be surprised, but he's probably a first round pick for sure.
He's going to find a way to Boston. I could just feel that.
I don't know. That's not really a team whose playing style he fits at all.
Whose playing style does he fit with, though? And well, do you have to adjust the way you play for having it? Is he also a good passer? Because I was like,
I watched him a
small handful of times. You need to have those abilities that he has. I feel like you need to be an exceptional passer to be valuable in the NBA.
The team I think he would fit the best with is the Philadelphia 76ers.
Interesting. With Embiid?
Just run the offense through him anytime Embiid rests.
Interesting.
Because you're already built around playing through your big man. So you just keep it going when he's on the bench.
Okay.
Anyways, Klingon, I think if you're like looking for the squinting and hard and looking for the most optimistic possible comparison, it's Rudy Gobert. Like, he's got defensive player of the year upside and couldn't be that same kind of a finisher out of the pick and roll vertical spacer.
Is Rudy Gobert playable in the playoffs, though?
Yes.
He was? Okay.
This idea that he's got played off the court in the playoffs is reductive and dumb, frankly.
You don't think there's a truth that big men sometimes become less valuable in the playoffs, though?
Undoubtedly, he becomes less valuable in the playoffs, but this also is not a particularly good draft. So I think that it's reasonable to take someone like that as high as number three.
Okay. Who, like, if you're the Blazers or something, right? They're in that range. I mean, I don't know if the Blazers need Klingon, but like.
The Blazers are most connected to a pair of French prospects at the top of the draft. So who are currently 1 and 2 in the top 100. Zachary Risacher, who's a wing who shot the three really well in Euro, I can't remember what it's, I think it's Euro Cup play, but not so well in the domestic French play. And then Alex Saar, who spent a year at Overtime Elite and has been playing in the Australian NBL this season. He's a center. So, but maybe with, kind of a stretch five.
It's like the
So,
return of the big man in this draft.
definitely is. Yeah.
Kind of a wild one. How many games? The NBA season ends on Friday?
Sunday.
Sunday?
Yes.
Okay. So the Lakers are in the play-in. There's no.
After tonight's loss, I don't think it's plausible for them to get out of the play-in.
Who did they play today?
They lost to the Warriors. They're almost certainly going to be 10th now.
Oh my God. Okay. Fair enough. I might have to fuck around and cheer for the Timberwolves.
Go Bear. Next up, a farewell to Chris Gobrecht, the legendary UW women's basketball coach in the 1980s and 1990s, announced to retirement last week at age 69. Gobrecht was at UW from 1985 through 1996, leading the Huskies to 9 NCAA tournament appearances in 11 seasons, 2 Pac-10 titles, 4 Sweet 16s in the Elite Eight in 1990. She left for Florida State, later coached at USC and Yale before wrapping up her career at Air Force. All told, Gobrecht had spent 44 seasons as a Division I head coach. An amazing career. And they didn't make it to the Final Four like the Kelsey Plum team did under Mike Nabors, but UW women's basketball was a huge deal in the 80s and 90s, kind of set the tone for the Storm, and it was Chris Gobrecht as coach who was responsible for that. Finally, this week, some very sad news. Full Tilt White Center is set to close after the tragic death of founder Justin Klein at age 49 following a heart attack. His widow posted on Instagram that Justin founded Full Tilt with the hope he could work for himself and be part of the neighborhood in a positive, fun way. He wanted a place for music and art and our families to play. We opened on June 20th, 2008, and were floored from day one and how much the community embraced us. We met so many people and made so many friends that we still hold dear. We loved watching kids learn to play pinball and Pac-Man and beg to stay just a little longer. So many artists and musicians and chefs have shared our space, and we've been honored to be part of those journeys. Full Tilt was never just about the ice cream, but now Justin is gone, and it just isn't the same without him. It's time for Full Tilt as we know it to end. The Columbia City location will stay open. Sounds like that's under slightly different management, but certainly a loss of a fixture in the heart of White Center and in an area that got hit hard with the fire a couple years ago. And Justin Klein's passing, certainly a great tragedy.
Yeah, devastating news about his passing and for this particular Full Tilt location. I mean, even just to take a step back on Full Tilt in general, it was a transformative location as far as ice cream in Seattle. And to me, still is. Like, we haven't done Seattle's best ice cream. There's no competition between Full Tilt because what you get with Full Tilt is not just the ice cream, which is incredible, but it's the entire culture, the entire vibe of being there. Being in White Center, like, White Center's gentrified now, right? Full Tilt was there before all of that happened. And, we grew up, our mom working at the White Center Library, we grew up being around there quite a bit and us living very close to White Center. It was nothing like it for so many years, decades and decades in White Center. And literally, it was a row that it's on where it's all porn stores. And then Full Tilt gets dropped in there. I remember when it opened, I was like,
Some of
wow,
those had to
on
be
nuts.
dive bars already
I
at that
don't,
point, right?
but they were dive bars, but not dive bars in the cool way. Not in the Snohomish County pie dive bar way. They were dive bars. And it was dive, I don't even know if there were any, but it was like old restaurants, porn stores, maybe a dive bar. And then Full Tilt pops up in there. The ice cream was incredible. Being there felt good. And I think that to me was the most important thing about it. And they open up the Columbia City location, which also is great. They maintained basically the exact same environment for the entire, since 2008 to 2024, they didn't expand that much. They didn't push it. The ice cream was still the same. They had good vegan ice cream. They had interesting ice cream flavors. Every time you went in there, it was good ice cream. It was the cause that, I mean, you remember this, the Rainier beer and peanuts ice cream.
Of course.
Was the reason that I got tested for a peanut allergy, because I needed to eat that ice cream. And I never once had it also after finding out that I was fine eating peanuts. But like Full Tilt ice cream for the community of White Center, there are many people who have come along after and probably will take credit for any sort of quote unquote transformation, gentrification. This is where it started to me, is with Full Tilt. This is the heart. And I think the best part about it was it wasn't trying to be something that White Center wasn't. It fit in culturally with the community in White Center. It wasn't like, we're going to take this bougie ass fucking upscale restaurant attitude to White Center because it's an up and coming neighborhood. It was, we're going to reflect the community. And it was diverse people who worked there and diverse people who went there to Full Tilt. It wasn't exclusionary in any way. It wasn't wait months for a fucking table. Like, that's what Full Tilt was about. And it was awesome.
Yeah, I'd shout out Proletariat Pizza as well. Was
those two were kind of like the two right across the street from each other.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a tragic situation, and I will love Full Tilt forever.
Same. All right. Well, you alluded to this. Should we get into our latest stop in our search for Seattle's best cookie, which took
us
all the way up to Snohomish, a county that you did not know Everett was a part of?
It's still pretty far from Everett.
Well, in this case, we're talking about the town of Snohomish as opposed to just the county of Snohomish, the home of Snohomish Pie Company, which, according to their website, started making pies in 1996 in the quaint historic town of Snohomish. How did you refer to it again?
What did I refer to it as?
How did you refer to Snohomish?
I fucking love Snohomish, for what it's worth. I don't. Did this in the chat, or did I say this?
Yeah,
to you?
I think you did in the chat, didn't you?
I was hyped on Snohomish after a while. I was like, damn, I didn't realize. I wasn't familiar with your game. I want to find out exactly what I said about Snohomish, because I was kind of going off. Literally nobody responded.
Snohomish is popping and cute. I've never been here before.
It is?
I mean, I don't know. I've never been to Snohomish either, so I had no response. No, I mean, number one, I did not go. My girlfriend brought me back cookies because I think I was flying back from Boston when we had them. But second, she went to the Melt Lake Terrace location, not the original Snohomish one. That one opened in 2015.
I'm kind of Snohomish pilled. I had no idea. Shouts to John Brockman, right?
I believe so, yeah.
There you go.
We still haven't made it out to Brockman Farms. One of these years, we're going to do it.
For Halloween.
Yeah.
No, it's a lovely little town of Snohomish. It's like when you go to the old like pioneer style towns and, you know, everything is brick, but it all kind of fits together. It's one of those places where you see the corporate entities that are there, but they still look good.
Yeah. How close is it to Roslyn?
Culturally?
Yeah. Not geographically, I understand where Roslyn is.
I was like, you've come to the right place if you want to know about geographically how close two things are.
How similar is it to Roslyn?
I think they might be both in the same...
legislative district?
Yeah, legislative district.
That was your gerrymandering joke?
I don't know. They actually be, though.
You know, gerrymandering might have been the original Pelton Guest geography.
Anyway, I liked it better than Roslyn. I mean, Roslyn's nice, but like I feel like it's more like Cleellum or something like that. A little bit more, it's more like Cleellum, but more quaint and with less of the like corporate infrastructure, and also it's not in,
so
like,
fewer of the McDonald's because of the fact that it's not like a long I-90.
Yeah, there's not like the McDonald's and the Dairy Queen or whatever. A little bit less of like a stopover between two places type city. But all the positive parts of Cleellum that you like are right there in Snohomish, including the Snohomish Pie Company.
So it's interesting because the About Us highlights their namesake pies. But you go to their website, front and center, top of the website, you know what they're highlighting?
Cookies. There we go.
So we got multiple people, I think, told us we needed to check out Snohomish Pie Company. What did you have?
So I went there toward the end of the day, and they only had left oatmeal raisin and snickerdoodle cookies, which I'm fine with. I like both of those cookies overall. Chocolate chip obviously would have been kind of my go-to, and they had quite a few different ones. But I was like, sure, give me two of each of these. And, or I guess, what did you have?
I had the chocolate chip for sure and the s'mores.
Okay. I feel like, I mean, there was a line when we got there, like a pretty significant line as well. It's like 5 p.m. on a Saturday or something like that. And I thought that all the cookies were gone because I didn't see where they were. They're like right in the front where the like window is to the outside. I didn't see that. So I was planning on just going through and being like, fuck it, I didn't get any cookies, but I'm going to get pie. So.
Although you told me that you don't like pie very much, right?
We'll get there.
Oh.
On weekends, they have cream pies as well. So I didn't get one of those, but I definitely was like, my birthday's coming up. Initially, I was thinking about getting like a Molly Moose. Did the milk bar cake last year. It was fine. Pretty expensive. I was thinking about doing, they have Molly Moon ice cream cakes, which I was like, I don't know. I don't think Full Tilt makes cakes. They do parties, but they don't. I don't think they make cakes. I will note that the last day in White Center is the day after my birthday. So I will see you at Full Tilt on the day of my birthday. But
okay.
We have, it's a mandatory, right?
Yeah.
In White Center. I definitely, after this, was like, I might just get a cream pie from Snohomish Pie Company for this because they looked excellent. I didn't get one. Anyway, I got those two cookies, waited in the line, found at the front that they had the cookies, fortunately, so I was able to try them. And also got a berry apple crumble pie. And I'm just going to say straight up, the cookies are not Seattle's best cookie. They are very solid cookies. And look, maybe if I had a different flavor, I feel like you could tell from every type of cookie how good almost everything else is, because you could get the overall sense of the quality of the cookies. They're not bad. I think they're good to very good. They're definitely not Seattle's best. I don't think they need to be in the bracket. The thing that it reminded me of the most was, if you've ever been in the grocery store and you've seen these individually packaged Cougar Mountain Baking Company cookies, they have them at like, they have them at like Whole Foods, also local, I think from North Bend or something. I mean, Cougar Mountain's not that far from me, but the Cougar Mountain cookies is what it reminded me of. They're grocery store cookies for the most part. And like, they're just very, very solid cookies for a grocery store cookie. They're always soft. They have kind of a similar texture and consistency. They're not too much of anything. They're not too sweet. They're not too, they're not too crumbly. They're not too floury or whatever. Very, very solid. That's what the Snoqualmie Pie Company cookies reminded me of. I thought they were very good. I think the Cougar Mountain cookies are very good.
Can I tell you the story of Cougar Mountain? It's located in Seattle, for the record, and started by a guy who, David Saulnier, in the midst of attaining his English degree from UW.
There we go.
So UW English majors, stand up.
Yeah. But I want to try all sorts of cookies during the search. You should definitely try these cookies. I've been having them forever. They're good. They're good cookies. They're actually shockingly good cookies, considering they're grocery store packaged cookies. That's what it reminded me of. I guess, I don't know. What was your takeaway on the cookies?
Yeah, I think similar. I think, you know, one of the things we're learning in this cookie search is we always come to kind of understand our palate and understand what we're searching for a little better. We talked so much last week about the size ratio, the thickness ratio. These are definitely on the thinner side, all things considered. And it's harder to get a really moist cookie that way.
That I think is the main thing. I think it is the butteriness. And I think that's where Hello Robin is a buttery cookie. And I think that's what I think the buttery and salty is where I like cookies to be.
What was it? It was the viscous sweet nexus is what we were looking for in the teriyaki sauce. And you're looking for the butter salt nexus.
I don't need cookies to be salted, but like they do have a salted butterscotch at Hello Robin, which is phenomenal. But the cookies are so buttery that they're not overly rich. They're so buttery though that they stay really, really moist when you have them. And I actually think the smaller size helps them out too.
I think that probably makes sense. So are we going to award this one Peltoncast P?
Sure. I mean, I would stop off in Snohomish for them.
Right.
Yeah,
Okay.
so I would travel there. But what I would travel for is pie.
Oh, wow.
And so I got, it was a crumble, not a pie. And I think that's an important distinction because I think the top of pies, it's not the crust. Maybe, I don't know what the fuck you call the top of a pie. I guess it's the crust also.
Yeah, I think so.
It's all the crust. Everything is the crust. Having a crumble on top, though, that is top-notch pie right there. I had that, and it was one of those situations that I was talking about with cookies where it's late at night. I had had half during the day, and I was like, I'm just going to save the other half for Mrs. Fantasy Genius. And then I saw it there, and I was like, I'm just going to have a bite of pie. And then all of a sudden, I am licking the pie, the plastic thing that it came in. I'm like scraping the edges with the fork, getting as much pie as I can. So that was phenomenal. I'm all about that pie. It's Snohomish Pie Company.
I'd love to hear it. Okay.
Which they make pie. Like, that's what they should be doing.
I mean, they make both, but
the cookies are good, but the pie was phenomenal.
There's probably a reason that they're named the Snohomish Pie Company and not Snohomish Cookie Company.
That's the thing. The thing that keeps it moist, though, is the crumble on top. That is good shit right there.
What,
so I
what
think
year,
I like crumbles. I don't know if I like pies.
What year do you think we're going to be doing our search for Seattle's best pie?
Best pie? Well, we can't do pizza pie. So
the Appleberry Crumb,
we'll
their number one bestseller, according to
Is it really the one that I had?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The people know. There are certain situations where it's like, I always think about this on Spotify, where there's like the song that I love, but it was never a single. And then you look on Spotify and you're like, it's their number one song.
Yeah.
And it's because the people always know, right? The algorithm always finds us, just like the Berry Apple Crumble will always find us. People, the pie's fine, but crumble is where it's at. Pie has marketing. Pie has the name brand aspect to it, but pie doesn't actually win in the end.
The label's pushing pie.
Right? Pushing pee. That's what they're talking about, is pie in the song.
Who knew?
Anyway, I had a great time. I loved going to Snohomish. It was one of those things where I was like, fuck it, I guess I'm driving to Snohomish in this break. And all of a sudden, like, it was me and the 10 of the 10 to 15 children. Me and the 10 children, we drove through Snohomish again. We did a lap. I was like, I don't want to go back. Let's do another lap of Snohomish. There's a giant tree in the middle of town. It's
did
great.
The kids enjoy it as much as you did?
They really did. I was like, do y'all want to do another lap? And they were like, absolutely, we do.
Wow.
There's also a pie dive bar right next to the Snohomish Pie Company.
A pie? Wait, like, are they serving the Snohomish Pie Company pie or their own pie?
I assume it's owned by the same people.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's like
that makes sense.
Pie Dive, like High Dive.
Oh, that's a great name.
And it's next to the Snohomish Pie Company. So I assume that there's shared ownership. But it was one of those things where, again, that is not the type of bar that was in White Center in the 90s, 80s and 90s. There was nothing hip. There weren't puns at these dive bars.
I suppose that is probably true here. Huh. You know what? I think this, I don't know, this might be different.
It's obviously, they're right next to each other. There is... They might have different ownership, but it's still like knowing reference to the Snohomish Pie Company being next door. It's one of those things. I love the word, how dive bar has been so co-opted as like cool, hip and cool. And it's just like, sometimes dive bars are a little scary to go into. Like that's what a dive bar actually is.
That's fair.
It's not your like dive bars now, like hipsters are like, oh, I love to go to a cool dive, get a cooler high life. It's like, nah. Dive bars used to be different.
You missed on Top Chef this season. They went to the Miller Caves, which apparently are where they used to store the beer back in like the 19th century.
Prohibition.
And pre-prohibition, I think.
They were just storing beer in caves?
Yeah, because it was naturally cold.
I mean, fair enough.
And then it got covered up and they rediscovered it in like the 70s and 80s. And now you can go down there and have events, including a Top Chef competition.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Great. Another situation of something that was useful back in the day and now is exclusively available for hipsters in 2024. Go have cool events there.
Well, does that transition us to talking about the Mariners?
Oh, God. I mean, they were at Miller Park last week, and there was a lot of sliding down the slide in center field for Brewers home runs. So.
Oh, dear. Oh dear. But do they serve? Yeah, I guess I'm sure they serve still Miller at Miller Park. They were
Do
noting
they
on.
serve?
I mean, it's not Miller Park anymore, but they were noting on Pack Your Knives that the Bucks do not have Miller as their beer sponsor. The
This,
arena serves Anheuser-Busch.
there are some situations that, not some situation, there are every situation that corporations ruin things by not just fully not getting it. And situations like the same with like the Rainiers literally not having Rainier in the building. It's just like, really?
What are you doing here?
Right?
Well, again, that brings us to your favorite segment.
What are you doing here?
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Mariners have ruined spring. Every time I hear a bird chirping or see a tulip blooming, it makes me think of this baseball team, and I'm disgusted. And really, it's not even fair to spring because this season was lost in the winter. Since the beginning of 2023, they're a 71 and 76 baseball team. If you take away 1 month when the Mariners were trying to tank and then trick themselves into being contenders, they went into the offseason with a plan. And sometimes plans are wrong. You've talked about this, that inside of organizations, there's always a reason to do something. And sometimes those things aren't right. They locked in on strikeouts. And somehow still strike out more than basically every team in the league. And can we even take a step back on that perspective? If you look at team strikeouts, there's almost no correlation between less strikeouts and success. It was wrong. They said they were set on pitching, which is basically like the 2017 Jags saying they didn't need to improve on offense. I watched Emerson Hancock pitch on Sunday, and he doesn't even have AAA stuff. That and a combined 1-5 in Castillo and Kirby starts, and this team is among the worst in the league. They said they didn't care about youth or vibes, and it's almost impossible not to do the same take as last week again. But let's be real with ourselves here. Luka has more home runs than Ty France, Julio Rodriguez, and Mitch Garver. And which part of the Jorge Polanco experience have you liked more? Is it the negative 0.6 wins in just 12 games, or is it the horrible defense? Meanwhile, Kelenic is still hitting 500 in Atlanta and would easily be the best player on this team. Could we do keeping track of Kelenic weekly watch to see if he would be the best hitter on the Mariners weekly?
I prefer not to.
Yes. Yes is the answer to that question. We can. We have to do various weekly watches. Kelenic has more WAR than any Mariner, of course, and the vibes in the clubhouse are desultory. When Canzone hit that homer earlier today, the team could barely even bother with the fucking trident. They've given up already. But I've got a summertime solution to this team's problem, and I'm not giving up on them because summer is here and the time is right for fighting in the streets. This team is in desperate need for an old-fashioned bullpen running in, benches clearing, pick up the bases and throw them, double birds to the crowd, brawl. That is the only thing I could see saving this season because right now, the Mariners definitely can't beat them, so they might as well fight them.
That's definitely not a phrase, but I endorse it, I suppose.
They literally, I swear to God, this team actually needs that. Scott
Is
Servais has to do something
Jesse
right now.
Winker signed
No,
somewhere?
I think he's out of baseball. I think he might have signed a minor league deal with somebody, actually. I saw that at the like near the end of free agency. He signed a minor league deal somewhere, maybe even back in Milwaukee.
I wonder if he has an option to get out of it if someone else is willing to call him up. He actually is on the Washington Nationals, it
Oh, the
appears.
Nats. Okay. He signed that deal late in.
But he is currently in the major leagues.
All right.
So, alas.
I just, everything about this team is so frustrating. And I've watched way too much Mariners baseball.
I've
But
advised you to stop watching Mariners baseball.
I
That
just,
I think part of the
I.
reason that I'm not as emotionally like devastated by the start is because I've barely watched any of the Mariners, and it is just a much
I
healthier
don't
place to
have the
be.
NBA to pay attention. I couldn't tell you what's going on in the NBA
No
right
one's
now.
stopping you from having it. You've got Root
That
Sports.
you know who's
You can watch
stopping
the
me from
Blazers.
having it? David Stern is stopping me from having it. Howard Schultz and Clay Bennett. No one is stopping me from having the NBA. Literally everyone is stopping me from having the NBA. It was systematic. They went out of their way to make an example of the city of Seattle to purge other cities for tax money. Are you unaware of that happening?
Well, also, it's because the city of Seattle chose to give its tax money to the Seattle Mariners. They were like, please take our money.
They
Sonics,
learned.
we don't want anything.
They learned from that.
And
David Stern,
see how that
two
trust has been
times.
rewarded.
Two times. We'll always have playoff run. Two times David Stern stopped me from paying attention to the NBA. So yes, somebody is stopping me. Also, what am I going to do? I have Root Sports so I can watch the last four Blazers games?
It's
Are you
funny because it's
kidding
real.
me?
I mean,
Nobody's stopping me from watching the NBA. The other thing is the ticket prices. I was looking at this earlier because I was like, I've got there's the weekend. I have two children here. I'm going to be alone. Maybe I'll just go to a Mariners game. It's supposed to be kind of nice on Saturday in Seattle. And it is 30 fucking dollars for center field tickets. That is three times the price last year for this baseball team. I'm sorry that you made a shitty deal with Root Sports, but this is not the way to get that money back. The annoying thing is that some of those tickets are sold also. I am this close to calling for a general walkout on the Mariners.
a general walkout, huh?
That is what they need. They have to be told. And let me just tell you right now, it is a long baseball season and they do not sell tickets well in advance. Maybe for the Cubs series in April, they've sold those tickets. There also probably are a lot of Cubs fans. And see, I would say that I would guess at least half of the tickets are sold to Cubs fans. But like,
I would guess so, yeah.
there are a lot of Cubs fans. I get that. It's not the same for the Reds necessarily coming during the week. But like, this, it is going to get ugly. We are talking is going to be A's style ugly in these crowds.
Not going to be A's style ugly. The team is not moving to Sacramento, but guess who has a better run differential than the Mariners?
Is it the A's?
It is the A's. They have a better run differential. I mean, here's the thing about the Mariners is like, as much as you want to complain about the offseason moves, like the Julio Rodriguez and JP Crawford have been worse than any of their additions.
But J.P.
George
Crawford,
Kirby and
they
Luis
have not been,
Castillo.
they have not. Jorge Polanco has been the worst player on the team. Jorge Polanco has the worst WAR of anybody on the team. So don't say that they've been worse than any of their additions.
Okay, fine. I am not watching these games and therefore can't tell how much he's responsible for their
You
poor
can
defense.
read a
Jorge
fucking.
Polanco has a better OPS than Julio
He
Rodriguez and
has
JP Crawford.
negative
Like, I guess I just don't
0.6 WAR,
understand.
three times as bad as J.P. Crawford.
Like, is the argument that the Mariners' cheapness somehow has made Julio Rodriguez bad and George Kirby bad? I don't get the argument because there's a cause and there's an effect, but the cause has nothing to do
The
with the effect that
argument.
we're seeing. Again, all the players on the Mariners who are all have been all stars, or all the best players in the teams, Cal Raleigh has not been good either. Like all the proven commodities have been awful to start the season. Like I don't understand what management was supposed to do with Julio Rodriguez, JP Crawford, Cal Raleigh, Luis Castillo, and George Kirby are all bad. Like
I don't
blame the
really know
hitting
on that one
coach?
either. But the thing is, they just needed more good players. We knew that.
I mean, I think that argument was more salient last year when it was like they finished two games out of the playoff. They were not trying to
Now
tank.
it'll be great because they'll finish way more than two games out of the playoffs.
But like
Good
if
news.
all the good
Where's your
players on the team are bad,
54%,
it doesn't
motherfuckers?
matter about the middling player, whether the middling players on the team are middling or terrible, it's irrelevant. Like again, there's no solution for all the good players. All of them are bad. And the real solution is regression to the mean. Like one of the things that heartened me, my biggest concern about the first couple weeks of the season has been Luis Castillo, because I have feared, given his age and his contract,
He's not
and the
that
fact that
old.
he's a pitcher, and the fact that he's a pitcher, like all the, are you aware of this, that all the good pitchers are injured?
I think that is an overblown thing. I think people are trying to create a narrative more than it
People are
is
not
fact.
creative narrative. Ben Lindbergh had a great piece about this on
Did
The
he?
Ringer last week.
People are trying to create a narrative also.
I mean, well, yes, narratives are how we understand the world around us. So everything is a narrative. It's not a false narrative. People aren't fitting the facts to the narrative. They are creating the narrative out of the facts.
They are trying to understand all of the injuries when sometimes shit just happens. It's the same thing happened in the NFL as well. There was a year where all the quarterbacks got hurt. I think it was two or three seasons ago. But there's not always
a trend line of pitcher injuries. It only points in one direction, and that direction is not down.
Since when? When did that start?
Well, since basically the existence of baseball, but specifically in the tracking era, because there's been such a focus on velocity, and velocity is more dangerous, and it's causing more pitcher injuries.
I agree. This is why everything that happens, as a person who has a child who's a pitcher, I'm constantly vindicated for not caring about velocity.
Yeah.
When people are like, how fast is Luka throw? I'm like, I have no idea, and I don't want to know.
But that's not...
Talk to me about his control. Talk to me about the spin on the ball. Those are things that matter.
Baseball teams care about velocity, so ultimately you will be forced to care about velocity.
I do think that that is true, but this is not even necessarily a baseball team issue overall, because the way that the league is structured, you can chew up young pitchers and pay them basically nothing and then let them go.
It is a baseball team issue.
I mean, it's an issue for the players more than it is for the teams.
Right. Like, but it's an issue for the league, which is why the league is looking into it.
What are they going to do? Tell teams to care about pitchers, have a speed limit? Like,
well,
there's no solution
you can
to this.
Reduce the number of pitchers and therefore force teams to not encourage their pitchers to go max velocity at all times.
Why would that reduce? Why would reducing the amount of pitchers?
Because you have to pitch one of them.
Okay, baseball just a year ago made a bunch of rules to help out the hitters because pitching was too good. Did they not?
The pitching is too good because pitchers are trying their hardest all the time. And that means they can't pitch as long and they get injured more frequently. Like, it's better for the teams, but it's worse for baseball.
I do not know how they're going to fix this problem. Tell people to not try as hard.
And maybe they can't. Like some of these things, it's Pandora's box.
They could increase the strike zone.
That's not going to help hitters. Certainly a large factor in
hitters aren't getting hurt, though. If hitters get out, they don't get hurt.
Teams used to want their pitchers to pitch a lot. Teams no longer want their pitchers to pitch a lot. They want them to prioritize every single pitch rather than being able to pitch a lot. So if you can change that part of the equation, you might be able to get things in a better scenario. But all of this is a significant detour from the fact that, again, pitchers are wildly unpredictable and have potential to fall off. And that's
and
been my biggest concern for Luis Castillo.
Castillo is not watching him pitch. It did not feel to me, and looking at his stuff, Kirby and Castillo, I don't know why the Blue Jays hit them so comfortably. Hancock does not have major league stuff.
Sure. Emerson Hancock hopefully will be out of the rotation in a week or two. I agree that they should have signed Blake Snell. No one is disputing that they should have tried to sign Blake Snell if Blake Snell wanted to come here on a short-term deal.
You kind of were disputing that. You were saying that management had a great offseason. 10 out of 10. No notes.
I recall saying that they had no holes.
You were like, Mitch Garver and Jorge Polanco are it. We're done. Maybe signing...
Mitch Garver and Jorge Polanco had strong projections. I guess I don't understand why people are saying they could a priori tell which players are going to do better than their projections and which players are going to do worse just based on vibes.
You can't argue that the Kelenic trade wasn't bad.
The Kelenic trade was strictly a financial trade.
But it wasn't a financial trade because they ended up spending the money. Is it one-to-one with Mitch Garver? Because then you could have had Kelenic and Marco Gonzalez instead of Mitch Garver. And that is a better thing to have on its own.
But I'm telling you that if you looked at any objective projections before the season, they would have told you that is not a better thing.
Would they have also told you that Kelenic is 24 years old and Mitch Garver's 33?
Yeah, actually, projection systems do know what age players are, remarkably.
The projections aren't just for this year. We're talking about value for a player overall. Already, Kelenic is a better player than any Mariner hitter.
Sure, I don't think the big complaint about the Mariners' offseason was, hey, they're too focused on winning in 2024 at the expense of future seasons. That wasn't it.
They did both things wrong, though.
But I'm saying
they gave up the future and the promise of the future and also got worse this year. But what thing did they do right?
You can't just say that it was automatic that they were going to be worse this season when, again, objective measures going into the season suggested that these moves were going to make them better.
Why did the Twins, what did they trade for Polanco? I was looking, it was a couple of prospects, a couple of solid pitching prospects.
I think there was one pretty good prospect.
And then Topa. It seemed like the Twins were a little bit too comfortable to trade Jorge Polanco.
Well, they had a third baseman that had come up last season and kind of displaced him, as we talked about at the time. I mean, yes, it probably is something of a sign if teams are willing to trade you their player.
How much
was a team that was willing to trade their player? The Mariners with Jared Kelenic. And again, this is what I'm saying is, you can't say that every decision the Mariners they're uninformed and the other teams is informed.
Decades of evidence that every decision the Mariners make is wrong.
I mean, the Jerry DePoto era has not been that. I don't think we can look, I don't think we should, the fact that they signed Richie Sexson should influence our decision, our thinking on whether the current front office is any good.
The money for Garver was not that much money. And there had to be, maybe the Rangers weren't willing to spend it, but the fact that the Rangers weren't that interested in Mitch Garver coming back at 12.5 a year also should have been telling.
Again, just all the other teams are smart and the Mariners are stupid. That's not, to me, a compelling argument.
Is it not? Literally, they've made the playoffs one time since 2001. How is that not a compelling argument? They should be in the fucking George Costanza rule right now.
I just don't think judging the Jerry DePoto era by signing Jeff Cirillo or trading for Jeff Cirillo is a relevant data point.
How long has Jerry DePoto been the GM or whatever he is? How long has he been with the organization?
A long period of time, but remember that they pivoted to tanking during this extended period of that time.
Hold on. This is the person you're defending right now. When did he start with the team? In 2015. So this is our ninth year of Jerry DePoto, and they've made the playoffs once. And we're yeah, great. Sign me up for that.
I don't think that make the playoffs or not is the relevant target here. They won 2000.
No, the target's 54%.
They won 89 games in 2018. They would have made the playoffs under the Glory rules. They won 88 games last year. You're saying that all non-playoff teams are created equal, as if this is the same as losing 101 games in 2010 when they were going all
the playoffs, and the Mariners still haven't made it. They just add more and more and more.
I mean, you know that last year's Mariners won more games than the 97 Mariners.
Were they statistically speaking?
Actually, that's not true. I was misreading the chart here. They won two fewer games.
There we go. How dare you speak ill of the 97 Mariners?
97 Mariners were pretty good.
But also, that team lost in the first round of the playoffs, too. And they weren't the home. They were the wild card that year, right?
No.
They won the AL West. They won the AL West and lost in the first round.
I mean, you can't do anything based on the playoffs because the playoffs are fucking random. And also, everything is fucking random over 2 weeks of the baseball season, which is why the playoffs are fucking random.
All right. So Kevin Pelton says, Mariners season so far, great.
I didn't say that. What I am going to say is the season is not over. So anyway, as I was trying to say about Luis Castillo, his FIP is fielding independent pitching. Actually better than last year.
That's what I'm telling you.
The batting average
good.
On balls in play is .451 as compared to .268 last season.
Somehow
despite
every
his hard
single
hit
one of those
balls
been
being
hit straight at Jorge Polanco. If I am being even slightly objective, the pitching probably will get better than bottom seven in the league or something in ERA. The pitching will probably get better. Because again, Kirby's stuff looks good. Castillo's stuff looks good. The hits that It was like an infield single. I think it was Vlad Guerrero had an infield single. Some guy named Davis Schneider had a ball off the end of his bat that ended up scoring two runs. Like, the Blue Jays were scoring those runs kind of on some bullshit. Kirby was getting low-key rocked today, though. And the bullpen, for the most part, I think has been pretty solid. So if they could figure out the starting pitching, but there's a reality that every single other team in the league has scored seven runs or more, I believe, in a game, and the Mariners haven't yet. The offense, I am less confident in necessarily getting back. Julio is probably going to end up being fine.
Oh, you don't think Julio Rodriguez is going to finish the season with zero home runs? Yeah. I also suspect that's not going to be the case.
J.P. Crawford probably will get better. I'm not convinced that Jorge Polanco will be in the majors by the end of the season.
I mean, certainly it's plausible that he will not be in the majors by the end of the season.
So, Julio and J.P., yes.
Again, his down last year where they traded him afterwards was 789 OPS is compared to 517 now.
This is Polanco?
Yeah. Injury today. I guess he's down for that one.
He probably will get better, but also not being able to play defense is brutal as well.
Was he considered a bad defender before this? I really have no ability to.
I don't know if both plays were called errors earlier today. He had one obvious error.
He was positive defensive war in each of the previous three seasons, like basically zero before that. This is already his second worst season in defensive war.
I feel like we have to consider whether the Mariners are cursed.
I think we have to whether the vibes from the fans are the issue here.
The vibes from the fans? The team doesn't even like each other. I also don't like, let's come up with something new here, people. Canzone was like, I just homered. Does anybody care? They showed him and he was like, it was like casual high fives. It was nothing like when I homered in that game or when Luca homered and the entire team gathered around home plate to celebrate with him.
It's true.
Somebody did a backflip when he homered.
Really? I didn't see that in the game changer video.
He ran out, ran back, did a backflip. I didn't see anybody on the Mariners do a backflip when kids out homered to make it 5-1.
They eventually made it a 2-run game.
No, people were a little bit more excited with Haniger's homer after that. They got a little bit more. Okay. But then just the double play ball to end the game. Beautiful. A beautiful thing. Every Mitch Garver at bat, it's wild how quickly he can go from being like, oh, I'm so excited about seeing this player. Oh, man. Every time he's up, I'm so angry. It's like, it is incredible how quickly that can happen.
Indeed it is.
Anyway, things can change quickly, too. Who knows? Maybe they'll get better.
Well, you know, can't lose the one Seattle sports team.
Hello.
It's the Seattle Kraken who should be playing for lottery position.
Oh, God. This is the swoon. This is the fucking Mariners. This is what they do. They win when you win when you're not supposed to win, and you lose when you're supposed to win.
I think it was a little better in the Mariners' case. The draft
when
pick is not as
get
important.
Steven Strasburg?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yes, I thought you meant last year.
I mean, those have to be up there with the worst wins in Mariners history.
Yeah. A 5-0 shutout win over Arizona on Tuesday night. They all of a sudden, after being eliminated from the playoffs,
wow, there are two 5-0 wins in Seattle sports in the last week, and neither of them came from the baseball team.
That's pretty funny. The baseball team did at least score 5 runs in some games. They've won 5 of them.
Game?
Yeah.
I think it was just one, right?
Was it only the one? Didn't they lose the game with 5 runs on Friday night?
Maybe they did.
I believe it was a 6-5 loss. Kraken has suddenly won 5 of their last 7. Now, the bright spot here is largely because they keep playing the Anaheim Ducks, who they've beaten 3 times since March 26th. The bright spot here is Shane Wright. Last year's number 4 pick had 2 goals and assist in Friday's win over Anaheim, matching his previous career totals in both categories. Had another goal on Tuesday to open up the 5-0 win over Arizona. And like, if he's a real player next season, that's certainly a very positive development for the Kraken, especially given his age. So that's what I'm taking out of this is
all right.
Shane Wright, who is currently 20 years old.
Can we talk? Let's have a positivity podcast, okay?
This one or a future one? I think it might be too late for this one.
All right, fine. Next week. Next week will be all positive.
Pivoted positivity.
Yeah. But like Castillo's, I'm just going to say it. His strikeouts per nine are pretty solid. Logan Gilbert's is solid. I'm not saying I'm on ESPN. I can't see FIP. But like, to me, Castillo's stuff is just fine.
Yeah.
I'm not nervous about Castillo.
See, that's the downside of barely watching is I was just like yesterday I had the sound on while I was writing, but wasn't actually watching. So I just kept turning over to see all of these hits against Castillo, but I guess I could not tell that they, you know, it was just the batting average on balls in play, which we know is highly variable over small samples.
But Castillo and Kirby both being close to 7 ERA through 3 starts is obscene.
Yeah, I agree.
And Emerson Hancock being at a cool 11.4. It's just like, I don't know how many starts. I feel like didn't they pick up
two starts? I think you're like, I don't think that Emerson Hancock is good, but like you're saying that he doesn't have triple A stuff. Like, let's all remain calm here.
Well, they love calling players up from double A.
I agree that they do love that. He pitched, you know, 12 innings last year with a 4.5 ERA, a 4.09 FIP. He was like thoroughly fine last year.
We might have to start calling Bryce Miller Bright Spot, though.
Oh, there you go. Bright Spot Miller.
Harkening back to your, what was the year, the Husky football year, 2000?
Was it Craig Chambers was the bright spot?
Craig Chambers, free him.
Oh, no, maybe that was different.
What year was that, though?
It was, I want to say 2004.
Okay, it was after. Yeah, they were good in 2000. It was the...
Oh, 2000 was the year they went to the Rose Bowl.
It was the Cody Pickett Heisman year when they did the whole Heisman campaign for Cody Pickett. And his nickname was Heisey. Keith Gilbertson's nickname was Who Made You, Coach?
Yes. It had been 2003. No, I think it was 2004.
And somebody, I think it might have been Craig Chambers, whose nickname was Bright Spot.
Yeah, it was 2004 when they went 1-10 that season. The lone win coming over Nevada, I believe. San Jose State, they beat 21-6.
Were you going to those games?
I was not going to those games.
You were watching all of them, and I was definitely not watching all of them. They went 1-10 with Cody Pickett as the starter?
No, this actually was not the Cody Pickett season. It was 2004. Okay, 2003 was the Cody Pickett season. They went
That was the year that I'm talking about. Because I know that he got the nickname Heisey.
That is correct. That definitely happened.
Was Craig Chambers on the team in 2003?
He was not on the team yet.
Okay, so who was it who was Bright's? Was it Reggie Williams? No, he was gone, right?
And Reggie Williams was there, had 89 catches for 1,109 yards. And
I think it was Reggie. It must have been Reggie Williams.
Yeah, it probably had to be.
That's a lot of catches.
Yeah, amazing. Anyways, you know who experienced the regression to the mean as part of the brief Seattle swoon reprieve on Saturday
was the Seattle Sounders. Oh, there we go.
Who put 5 goals past the Montreal Impact as the floodgates opened. The aforementioned player of the match day, Rui Diaz, scored an improbable left-footed knuckleball from the edge of the box in the 20th minute to get them on the board. I have on here the Kraken on the board. They also 5-0 again.
Yeah.
They doubled it with Rui Diaz finishing from the spot 7 minutes later after an extended VAR review.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Jordan Morris scored a third early in the second half. Then Montreal was reduced to 10 men by a second yellow, allowing the Sounders to pepper them with shots. They converted 2 more with Alex Roldan tapping home a great setup by Albert Rushnak in the 81st minute. And Dylan Tevez netting a goal in the 7th minute of stoppage time, his second career MLS goal. This was the first I really watched the Sounders all season, so in my mind, the Sounders are just dominating opponents.
You watched like the one Mariners win when Julio walked it off, and then the Sounders game. So to you, it's been a great sports season.
Love it. Loving it. They went from -3 in goal differential to +2, one of the Western Conference better marks now. The only bad news was Nuhu leaving in the 11th minute of the quadriceps injury. But on the plus side, Joao Paulo returned to play the final 20 minutes off the bench, his first action of the season, coming back from a hip injury. Sounders now headed to Dallas on Saturday. They passed Dallas in the standings last weekend. As FC Dallas has just 4 points from 6 matches, a -4 goal differential, second worst in the Western Conference. So a chance for the Sounders to keep this going.
All right.
Seattle Reign FC could not participate in the Seattle Swoon as they were on international break.
Oh, okay.
They're back for their first matchup ever with Bay FC, the expansion side, on tap Sunday. In their inaugural season, Bay FC also boasts a 1-2 record thus far with a minus one goal differential, same as the Rain. They have five different players with a goal, but none with two as of yet. All right, Seattle Storm news. The WNBA draft is set for next Monday. They won't pick until number 14 in the second round, having traded the number four overall pick to Los Angeles, which also holds the second pick. If you look at the Storm roster heading into training camp, they're almost certainly going to only be able to keep 11 players on the roster. They have six protected contracts, three of last year's rookies remaining. So probably two spots for all their players on training camp contracts, including the WNBA vet Victoria Vivians, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, and then the players that they draft this year. So going to be an uphill battle for those rookies to make the team. We'll see if one of them can win a spot, as several did last year.
Let me just ask you, now that the NCAA tournament has played out, we have a better sense of who's in the draft. The decision to trade that fourth pick, because I see some players at pick four that I think are pretty solid. All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about this.
I don't think anything that's happened in terms of who's declared and who hasn't has come as a surprise to WNBA teams. Camila Cardoso, who I can't remember if she got most outstanding player of the Final Four or not, was hugely dominant on Friday night in their win over NC State, and also very good on Sunday against Iowa, is number four in the ESPN mock draft right now. If she's out there, that definitely would be a bit of a loss. But
I mean, who are the top three? Isn't she almost?
So the top two were very confident it would be Caitlin Clark to Indiana and then Cameron Brink to LA. Number three in the mock draft right now is Rekia Jackson from Tennessee.
Who's also very good, right?
No. Oh. No, her statistical projections are very bad.
Okay.
So if she's the fourth pick, if Cardoso goes number three, then I don't think the Storm missed out. If Cardoso is still available at number four, then they would miss out a little bit.
Who else
that's
is
my
in
official
that,
position.
That mix in the... Is there a fifth player?
I think there's a pretty significant drop-off in my mind after that top four.
What's up with Paige Beckers?
She's not in this year's draft. She's going back.
Okay.
So that's the knowledge that Paige Beckers was going back is part of why both Phoenix at number three and Seattle at number four traded away their picks. Yeah, really after them, I mean, Angel Reese is at seventh in the latest ESPN mock draft.
And how many years is it to Juju Watkins? Like, is Juju Watkins going to be like Caitlin Clark style? Like, you can't really call them once in a generation if it happens 4 years later. But
agreed. And I think Paige Beckers is, I'd still say Paige Beckers is a better prospect than Juju, but
really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I wrote a story last week about, you know, the argument that Paige Beckers might be better than Caitlin. I ultimately rejected it, but I don't think it's an unreasonable argument.
Is there a possibility that Caitlin Clark is not going to be as good in the WNBA as we think?
There's a possibility, but I think it's unlikely. I'm worried about that coming soon, how good she's going to be in the WNBA.
Because I do think, I mean, I guess basically, no matter what team she's playing for, there are going to be other good players around her. Like, the drop-off in talent is not going to be as high. But USC, South Carolina, also USC, but, like, you know, it's so strange to see it written that way.
Very South offensive when people read it. You call them USC.
South Carolina kind of shut her down in the second half and played physical and got in her face. Like, how good of a distributor is she? Because when you're a player like that,
I'm sorry,
you need to be.
You're asking how good a distributor the nation's leader in assists is?
I mean, sure, she's the nation's leader in assists.
I think she's a better passer than she's a shooter.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, is the NBA comp just Steph, or is there?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some Steve Nash elements because she's probably a better passer than Steph is.
I mean, Nash was probably a better passer than he was a shooter.
Yeah.
But also, it took a long time for Nash to kind of figure it out overall. That's like peak Steve Nash.
Yeah, he wasn't the all-time leading scorer in Division I history either. Like, he was good at Santa Clara. He wasn't that good. I mean, the thing about Steve Nash's development is the game had to evolve for him to be able to play like he did and people to recognize just how good he was. That evolution already happened. Caitlin Clark's going to come in playing like Caitlin Clark. And in Aaliyah Boston, she's already going to have like a way better teammate than anyone, with all due respect to Iowa's great role players that she ever played with at Iowa. Like, none of their other players, Hannah Stuhlke, who had a great Final Four for them, was their only other top 35 recruit, I believe, on the roster. And it's possible that none of those other players play in the WNBA.
Is Indiana, depending on how good Caitlin Clark is as a rookie, are they a possible contender right away, or are they still a couple of years away?
I think they're probably still a year and away,
Will
but
they make the playoffs?
I think there's a good chance. I think, I would expect them to be similar to the Storm team, Brianna Stewart's first couple of years, where they were at the bottom end of the playoffs,
Okay.
and similarly had Jewel Loyd there already. Like, Jewel Loyd took a little longer to become Jewel Loyd than, Leah Boston was great from day one, but they also don't have that Sue Bird on the roster.
I mean, there's basically, with the two teams being so good at the top, it's almost impossible for anybody else to be a contender right now. Is that fair?
I mean, it depends how broadly you use the term contender.
Okay. Do you think, here's another WNBA question for you. Do you think with Caitlin Clark in the league now, for the next season, let's say that she's in the playoffs, do you think those playoffs are going to be as compelling as this women's NCAA tournament was?
No, because I don't think that her team will have as good a chance. Storm, by the way, third be tied for third best championship odds at ESPN bet with
Really?
Connecticut.
Wow.
I'm surprised how low they are in Atlanta and Minnesota, but yeah.
When is
So
expansion coming?
next season,
To where?
San Francisco.
Bay FC?
Warriors WNBA.
Is that what they're called right now?
No, but
Oh, okay.
that's a
That's like the
an
working
alliterative
name.
way to refer to them.
This league needs expansion more than anybody has ever needed expansion. They need more teams as much as the MLS needs less teams.
It's funny because it's real.
I mean, isn't that true though? They're basically in their like 70s NBA era or something, where there's just so many good players kind of all on the same handful of teams.
I mean, and no, I wouldn't say that, because the 70s NBA, there had been a lot of expansion. It's more like the 60s NBA, when there
Okay.
was like nine teams for, like a decade.
Yeah. I'm
So.
excited. I'm ready.
All right, UW softball suffered their first series loss of the season at number 22, Oregon. Olivia Johnson had three hits and four RBI, including a three-run homer, as UW won the series opener 8-3. But on Saturday, the Huskies rallied within 9-8 after an early 9-4 deficit, but couldn't find the tying run. And then in Sunday's series finale, Oregon scored sixth in the bottom of the fifth after trailing 3-0, then held on for the 6-4 win. Huskies did bounce back Monday with a 3-0 win over crosstown rival Seattle U, with Lindsay Lopez and Brooke Nelson combining on the shutout. Nelson got the win in relief as Riley Holtorf hit yet another walk-off home run, this one a three-run shot in what was a tie game entering the bottom of the seventh. Huskies dropped one spot in the rankings to number 10.
Still losing to Oregon. Swoon.
Oh, no. Yes, definitely. They are off from Pac-12 play this weekend. We'll play at Boise State on Wednesday.
I'm a little shocked that Boise State fields a softball team.
That is kind of surprising. Yeah. Good for them, though. UW men's basketball news. Wesley Yeats III announced on social media Tuesday that he is submitting notification of transfer after redshirting last season. Yeats related to Quincy Pondexter, who is not going to be part of the coaching staff going forward. So this is not terribly surprising, but he did leave the door open in his message to potentially remaining at UW. All right, some disturbing news on Montlake with the football team is running back Tybo Rogers was suspended from team activities after his arrest Tuesday on two rape charges dating from separate incidents last fall, both involving women who met Rogers via dating apps. Rogers was charged with second-degree rape in one case and third-degree rape in the other. The timeline of this is interesting because Rodgers was previously suspended from team activities in November 2023 and missed the Pac-12 championship game, but was reinstated ahead of UW's college football playoff appearance, getting five carries against Texas, one against Michigan with a reception in each game. The timing of his suspension matches when one of the alleged victims posted an Instagram story accusing Rodgers publicly of rape. New head coach Jed Fish commented Tuesday that he was not made aware of the allegations against Rodgers when he was hired. He said, "I wasn't here for that. That had nothing to do with what we do here. As soon as I found out about the allegations, as soon as it was brought to our attention, he's been suspended indefinitely. I have no comment about what happened in the past. That has nothing to do with me."
Yeah, and obviously a pretty shocking story for Tyvo Rogers. I do think the timing of it, I mean, everybody involved with the program at the time is now gone, so it's almost hard to even discuss the idea of accountability, because obviously with Troy Dan and Kalen DeBoer no longer being with the program, but it is a little bit surprising that after that, assuming that the reason he was not with the team in the conference championship game was because of these allegations, having him rejoin the team for the playoff, I'm a little shocked by that decision.
We don't know for sure that that's the case. The charging papers and the investigating officer suggested that investigating officer wrote that the timing led me to believe that there is a connection between his suspension and her disclosure of the assault. Noted a comment from Ryan Grubb telling a reporter in December that Rodgers was working through, quote, some challenges he's had off the field. So again, don't know for sure that those are related, but certainly raises a lot of questions about who knew what and when. I mean, I think there is an interesting precedent at the college level in the Terrence Shannon Jr. case. So Terrence Shannon Jr., who plays basketball at Illinois, was key to their NCAA tournament run, was suspended with the team from the team after he was actually charged with rape in Kansas last year. And subsequently, a federal judge reinstated him and found that they had violated Shannon's civil rights by suspending him from the team after he was charged. So that does set an interesting precedent for teams' ability to kind of preemptively suspend players in situations like this, particularly if it's only after they've been notified of an investigation, but before any charges have been filed.
I mean,
what we think is right and what the legal system thinks is right and appropriate may not always be the same in these cases.
Yeah.
But, you know, clearly, if there was knowledge of these allegations that they were legitimate, Tyvo Rogers should not have been playing football for UW.
And going forward, I mean, using that case as precedent, UW can ask Tyvo Rogers to leave the program whenever they want, right? I mean, maybe not specifically a suspension. Is that where it's a legal issue?
It is a different situation because, you know, in Terrence Shannon Jr.'s case, this is midseason during his last year of eligibility. There was no recourse to potentially transfer to another school, as Rodgers would potentially benefit if he were, you know, remained suspended or were thrown off the team.
I mean, I would hope that Tyvo Rogers is not playing another game at UW, and I would be shocked if he did, obviously.
All right, the Seahawks began voluntary offseason workouts on Monday. All right, should we look into this Italian offensive lineman?
Look into it. do extensive research. Have you found anything?
Okay, so Max Percher is Italian born.
Yes.
He played college football in Germany?
Oh, yes.
This is quite a story. He started his career with the Sworco Raiders Tyrol before being on the practice squads for the Rams and the Lions. Well, like the Mariners are way down on Italian players despite Canzone's home runs. So if the Seahawks can keep an Italian offensive lineman, that really helps offset it. He's part of the Italian national team, according to
him. Is he really?
As well, yeah.
There's an Italian national football team?
I think the Italian national team might be pretty good at American football, actually.
Really? I will say right now, the Mariners might be down on amount of Italians, but their one Italian player leads the team in war right there. That was some week from Canzone. So he's going to be moving up in the order. If they put Ty France at cleanup all of a sudden. So that is something. They have an important impact from Italians on the roster. Is there any news about Haggerty? Is he just kind of recovering?
I haven't heard anything lately, no.
I will tell you exactly what this team needs. Number one, it's a brawl. And number two, it's Sam Haggerty.
Agreed. They need a little chaos ball right now. They can desperately use it.
I was kind of bummed when Samad Taylor got sent down. I don't know if they really needed Samad Taylor, like positionally speaking, but I like Samad Taylor. And when he had his couple of games here, it was fun having him on the roster.
You were saying that Dave Sims got so hyped about Samad Taylor's bunt. Another moment that I simply did not see.
I mean, this was on the radio. I was listening to it. But it was one of those things where he kept coming back to it. Like moments and moments later, I think Samad Taylor came around to score as well. And that was in Mariners win.
The day so, that we thought we were out of the Seattle zone. Incorrectly.
Okay. How many days is there until the draft?
A little over 2 weeks now.
I mean, Mariners, 16 days. That's actually coming up. Mariners will be trading out of that, or Mariners, the Seahawks will be trading out of that first round in no time.
I hope so.
It's funny. I feel like we spent so much time when they had, obviously, the pick that turned into Devin Witherspoon and the pick that turned into Charles Cross. Spent a lot more time talking about the draft, and I feel like we've talked about the draft basically none.
I agree. I'm not so that excited next, about it. I gotta week. Be honest.
I'm over here. The only thing I care about is complaining about Mariners baseball, evidently. That's all right. My kid's hitting dingers.
On that upbeat note, you've pivoted to positivity.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.